Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 15th of June. Joining us in just one moment, Lori Schneider, mountain climber, teacher, lifelong learner, and inspirational speaker, and you'll hear her story, and we'll speak with her in just one moment. First, I want to tell you that we're doing this trip to Springfield, which I've wanted to do for years. Wisconsin Public Radio traveling to Springfield, Illinois to celebrate in grand fashion Abraham Lincoln's 200th birthday. The date set for our trip, morning of Friday, October 2nd, and returning the evening of Sunday, October 4th. I'll be hosting the trip, and we are going to go all over the place. The Lincoln Museum, which is still fairly new and quite terrific. The Lincoln Library, the law office, and home of President Lincoln, his place in New Salem, which they've recreated, and it's wonderful, the general store where he worked and the place where he learned really the law. Self-taught guy he is. We're going to be staying at the President Abraham Lincoln Hotel and Conference Center, and we have some wonderful people with us. Douglas Wilson, who's a wonderful Lincoln scholar, the co-director of the Lincoln Studies Center at Knox College, author of Lincoln's Sword, The President and the Power of Words, will be our keynote speaker on Friday, and we'll also have a guest with us from UW Parkside and Kenosha's Civil War Museum. And that will be Stephen Rogstad, and he will be joining us on the bus. So we're going to get Lincoln all, you know, however much you want. We're going to talk with him about Lincoln as we travel down to Springfield, Illinois. So it's a fairly reasonable trip, I must tell you. And you got the bus, you got the hotel and the tourist sites and lunch and dinner on Friday, breakfast Saturday and Sunday, lunch on Sunday. And we'll have Lincoln lovers on the trip, so... Oh, it's going to be fun. Call Katie if you're interested, because it is filling up. 414-227-2047. 414-227-2047 for our Lincoln journey. Lori Schneider is joining us now. Lori says she developed a bad case of wanderlust when she was 15, and she traveled to the corners of the earth in search of unique cultures, people, and challenging experiences. She graduated from college in 1978 and began a 20-year teaching career working with special education children as well as kindergarten, first grade students. At the age of 43 in 1999, she woke up one morning with numbness in over 50% of her body. And within 2 months, it had spread throughout her entire body. The doctors said that it was MS, and she decided to accelerate her love of travel and set out to climb the highest peak on each continent, known as the Seven Summits. So with the highest peaks in Africa, Europe, South America, North America, Australia, and Antarctica, all summits that she had climbed, she set her sights on Everest. And her message was that if we believe, we can achieve. She's also been a marathon runner and has done all kinds of remarkable outdoor things. And we're happy to have Lori with us this next hour of the program. And our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you would like to send an email, it's talk@wpr.org. Hi, Lori. And we should also say she's from Wisconsin, living, I know you have family in Kenosha, too, don't you, Lori?
Actually, Janesville.
My family, in Janesville.
Yes. Southern Wisconsin, but we live up north in beautiful Bayfield, Wisconsin.
You live in Bayfield when you're not somewhere else in the world, right?
Yes. It's good to be home.
Yeah, I'll bet it is. Although this wanderlust sounds like it's a permanent part of your life, Lori.
Well, it is. It is. I've been traveling since I was 16 years old and climbing mountains for the last 16 years. So it's become a way of life for me.
Mm-hmm. Where did you get the wanderlust? Just tell me what struck you when you were 15 years old, I got to do all these adventures. It's a pretty young age, and you went pretty far.
Well, you know, I went to a wonderful camp in northern Wisconsin every summer, and they had a trip called the European. And if you were 15 years of age or older, you could apply to do this trip. And I asked my parents if I could go to Europe for the summer with the camp, and they said, well, if you can save the money. So I got a job working at a Mr. Steak restaurant as a hostess and saved most of the money that I needed and went to Europe for a summer, and that really catapulted me into the world of travel. I absolutely loved meeting new people, tasting new foods, experiencing new languages, and it all really started from there.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start climbing?
You know, back in high school, actually, my father was in the kitchen one day, and he said, you know, someday I want to go to Africa and climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And, you know, I love him dearly, and I said, someday I'll go with you. And then along came 1992, and I was getting ready to take a two-year backpacking trip around the world, and we planned to meet in Africa and climb Kilimanjaro on Dad's 61st birthday, which we did. We stood on the summit on his birthday, so that started the climbing.
Yeah. Had he been a climber in his life?
No, he'd been a runner. He was a marathoner and very athletic, and it was just something he had heard about and always thought it would be a great goal to shoot for, and it was wonderful, just absolutely wonderful to be able to go to Africa for a month and do that together with Dad.
Yeah, I would imagine. So you're in the middle of a two-year backpacking excursion when this takes place.
Yes, yeah, so I was doing my training skiing in Europe. We bought an old Volkswagen and had our skis strapped on top and ski during the day and then go running down in the valley at night to train and then flew to Africa and got off the plane and there was my dad.
Oh, my. Isn't it? And you both made it to the top. How long does that take?
You know, it's a shorter trip than most. It's about 5 days, 5 or 6 days up and down, and it's one of those climbs that is very underrated and underestimated. People say, oh, it's just a walk, but you gain elevation so quickly. We've really had difficulty with the altitude, and, you know, luckily we were fortunate enough to make it, but Dad always laughed if it was 1 foot further, he wouldn't have made it. And I said, I don't think I would have either.
And then you decided, was it after the MS diagnosis that you were going to do the seven summits?
You know, after Kilimanjaro, where I'd actually been feeling some numbness and tingling on, you know, that climb years before, but never equated it with MS. But, you know, Dad and I kept thinking, we'll do another climb someday. And we ended up deciding to go to Aconcagua on the Millennium and hopefully summit on New Year's Eve, 99-2000. And really, that was as far ahead as we'd planned. We just wanted to do another mountain that was a little higher and, you know, let's go to South America. But it really wasn't until I finished that climb and thought, gee, I have two of the seven down. I'll try four more, and I'll do everything but Everest.
Why not?
Yeah. That changed about a year ago.
Yeah. And so when did the diagnosis come? You said you had felt some numbness and tingling?
Yeah, some things, you know, as I'd gone through, you know, life and did not really think much of it. But actually, I woke up, I remember the day, January 4th, 1999, and getting ready to go to school, and I swung my legs out of bed, and I thought, gosh, my leg's numb, and gee, my arm is numb, and my face is numb, and my body's numb, and it was as if someone had drawn a line down the middle of my torso, and one side was numb, and one wasn't, and I had been training very hard for the Aconcagua climb, and I was running about 8 miles a day, and I called the doctor and I said, you know, that cortisone shot you gave me in my foot a couple days ago, could that have caused numbness, you know, on one half of my body? And he said, no. And they told me if it was still there the next day to go on back. And I did, and that's when the testing started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it they actually misdiagnosed or misread the very first test that would have shown I had MS, but they tested me for all kinds of things for the next several months, and in the meantime, I had gone to pretty much total body numbness, and that was when they realized, then they went back, did determine that it was MS, and said it was rapidly progressing, and that I could very well end up in a wheelchair, and it seemed that it was happening very quickly.
Mm-hmm. What do you do with a body that's totally numb, Lori?
You know, I hid it from the world for a long time, because it scared me so badly, and I was embarrassed about it. I didn't want people looking at me as if I was walking funny. At that point, I felt the numbness. My balance was bad, but no one really started to detect anything until I ended up in the hospital several times for tests.
Mm-hmm. And were you told, and so what were you doing with your climbing dreams at that point? Everything was on hold for you?
Well, no. In fact, I didn't even tell my dad and mom for about 3 months because I was afraid dad would say, well, we can't do the climb. And we were already so excited about it. But I remember one day when I was in the hospital when they still had not determined what the problem was, and I used to do 500 sit-ups every morning, and I was in the hospital bed about 5 o'clock in the morning doing my sit-ups, and the doctor walked in, and he said, what are you doing? And I said, I know you're going to be doing a spinal tap in a few minutes, and I want to get these done for the day because I'm going to South America to climb a mountain. And he kind of chuckled, and I think for a long time, most of the medical people that I was involved with did just that and said, well, you go ahead, honey, kind of a, you know,
right.
thing. And I met a doctor down the road that was an athlete, and he said, don't let go of your dreams. He said, keep your training up, get your body strong again, and, you know, believe in yourself. And he really was instrumental in me thinking that I could still do this, even though I knew my body was losing strength. I lifted weights every day. I knew exactly how much strength I was losing. I lost about 20%, and I slowly regained that before the climb.
Mm-hmm. And at what point did you tell your parents that this was going on with you?
Well, several months into it, it was hard to keep it a secret any longer from the people that I loved and cared about. And so I shared it with them, and it was, you know, shattering to my mom especially. And, you know, that was my fear, that it was going to be so scary for everyone. And but there came a point that I needed their strength as well as my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And when you're given a diagnosis of MS, there's a great deal of uncertainty, isn't there, with that? You can have weeks that are fine and times that are not. You never know exactly how it's going to progress, do you?
You don't. But when I was told of the diagnosis, mentally, my world crashed. I thought I was going to be disabled, in a wheelchair, and all of those things that at that point in my life I was not ready to accept. And I have come to learn that the MS, mine and everyone's, I believe, comes and goes. I had a hard time for that first 9 months or so with the numbness. Then it went away for many years. Then after I got back from climbing Denali and ran a marathon shortly after that, a lot of stress on my body, a lot of heat running the marathon, I started to lose my vision, which is another sign of MS. But that went away again with treatment, and things really with MS are so unpredictable that I believe you have to keep positive and keep mentally strong, because there are good days too.
Mm-hmm. And during those good days, you feel pretty much 100%?
You know, almost all the time I feel 100%.
Really?
At this point, and I am so fortunate. I know that I am one of the very lucky ones with my MS at this point, and you know, I appreciate every day that I can climb mountains and I can do the things that, you know, some people find it difficult to walk across the room with MS. And, you know, I encourage them to hold in their hearts the possibility that some days will be a little easier, and keep working toward dreams, even if they're not physical dreams. Put those dreams in your mind and say, wow, you know, this would be exciting for me to learn or to try and not give up hope that life can still be a heck of a lot of fun.
And you work now, I know you give inspirational speeches, but you really feel that a desire to, you have this desire and you've acted through on it to impact children's lives and to adults and people with disabilities, which is really a good thing.
Well, I enjoy going around and speaking, and I, you know, talk with young children, and I spoke at a woman's private high school, and have gone, you know, back to speak to groups of men and women. Both really, the message to believe in yourself crosses, you know, health issues and age barriers, and it's really just, you know, to never give up on yourself. If you don't believe in your own power, who will?
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for Lori, and our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that. That's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Lori has climbed all over the place. She has done a great deal of climbing since she was diagnosed with MS in 1999. She has gone on to climb the seven summits, and she has been training and doing marathons and taking care of her body physically and mentally for a number of years, and her story is quite an inspiration. Her dream started out as an ambition to set foot on each of the seven continents and experience the people, culture, and heartbeat of a foreign language. And she's done that and then some. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lori Schneider is our guest, and let's go to some phone calls. Lori, Lisa from Wausau, our first caller. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Hi. Hello, Lisa.
Good morning. Say, I'm really interested in the treatment that you received that's been effective for you.
You know, I am one of those cases that, like I said, I've been stable with my MS for a long, long time. So the treatments that I had at two times during my flare-ups were both IV steroid treatments that lasted about a week, where each day I would have the steroid drip, and that got rid of the inflammation in my body. And I've recently spoken with my neurologist, and by checking the brain MRIs every year or every couple of years, we're realizing that my MS is not progressing, and that because of, you know, my body's reaction, you know, to the things that I'm doing, keeping fit and strong, and some of the alternative things that I'm trying, that I'm lucky and I'm choosing not to be on the daily injections at this point. Mm-hmm. Most people, that is definitely the plan for their MS, because it's not as predictable as mine seems to have been recently. So, you know, I'm doing things. I've changed my diet. I'm generally on a, you know, a vegetarian type diet with not a lot of dairy. I take a lot of the omega-3, 6, and 9 oils. It all kind of goes back to the original MS diet, the Swank diet, and I use a diet very similar to that. But, mm-hmm. you know, I'm very fortunate, like I said, and we are monitoring my MS, but at this point, I'm staying extremely healthy, mm-hmm. and we're, at this point, choosing the route not to do the daily injectables, but that is a real possibility if things start to change on my MRIs.
Thank you. And my understanding is that the daily injectables really don't, excuse me, have a high rate of side effects. But is that not your impression?
You know, it's, I think that they are very wonderful drugs at this point, and I think that the side effects, you know, are minimal. The benefits definitely outweigh any side effects that there might be. For me, it was a matter of lifestyle. Now, I know there are other people who climb and do the injectables. They do those things at, you know, at this point in my life. If I do need to go on daily medication, I'll participate in an oral medication study that they're doing at the University Hospital in Madison.
Well, I don't want to take any more of your time. I'm sure there's other callers, but thank you. And it's your story is amazing, and good luck climbing.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks very much for the call.
Bye.
Amy is next from Manitowoc. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Well, you kind of answered my question. And first of all, I want to say what an inspiration you are. Thank you. Regarding the diet, could you go a little bit further into your alternatives? You said that you're on a vegetarian diet, but what type of other alternative approaches do you use?
Well, again, it goes back to the original Swank diet, it was called, and I took a lot of elements of that. When I climb, I do eat meat because I have to get a lot more protein than I was getting through. Well, I was getting a lot of protein, but I wanted a different kind of protein. So, you know, I still eat meat. I grew up eating meat. But basically, I do a lot of organic, you know, fruits and vegetables, and try to keep as healthy as I can. I really try to keep my body in the best shape that I can keep it in. I honestly think that I'm stronger now than I was 10 years ago when I did get diagnosed.
I'm sorry. Do you go to a chiropractor?
You know, I go to an acupuncturist from time to time. I did that before my climb. I do not go to a chiropractor. We're in a small town. We don't have one here, but Juliet Health House up in Bayfield set up an exercise program for me and a real basic, you know, health protocol that I followed to get my body really strong before the climbs.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Now, you just did Everest just recently, right?
Yes, just got back. I've been in Bayfield a little over a week.
Oh, my gosh, it's only been a week.
Yes, in fact, that's why I still have a husky voice. It's called the Khumbu cough when you're on Everest up at the higher elevations. The air is very dry, and then with 5 days with an oxygen mask, breathing that dry air, a lot of people develop a cough, and it lasts for about a month after you get back. And I actually got back in the States on June 2nd, but spent a week with my family down in Janesville before coming up to Bayfield last week on Tuesday.
Uh-huh. Welcome home.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you wear a mask for how long? Because you need it to be able to breathe on top?
Yes. I had an oxygen mask on for 5 days, from 23,000 feet on up to the summit, which is at 29,000 feet. That took several days of climbing to get up there, and then we wore oxygen as well, coming back down and all the way down to our lower camp. So night and day, 24/7, we had it on.
Ooh, that must be hard.
You know, it's awkward to get adjusted to, but it helps so much. It really, really helps. So you don't mind changing an oxygen tank at 2 in the morning.
I think I might,
yeah.
But you wouldn't. Who was with you on that trip?
I went with a climbing company called Alpine Ascents, and we had 14 climbers that started the climb and 5 guides. 3 climbers had to stop early on. 2 were airlifted out, one with frostbite on 8 fingers, and one with pulmonary edema. And the 3rd climber, a woman, just a wonderful, wonderful woman, she had pulled a muscle badly in her leg and had to stop. And then on summit day, out of the 11 that were left, 9 made it to the summit and 2 made it pretty darn close, but had to turn around. And 2 of the 3 guides had physical difficulties. One had a cracked rib with pneumonia, and the other was experiencing some pneumonia side effects and also very, very cold extremities. So 2 of the guides had to go back, and the other 3 were able to go up with the rest of us, and as well as about 10 Sherpa that joined us that day to help carry the extra oxygen. So we had quite a quite a group, but we're all sprinkled out along the side of the mountain and didn't really see each other for most of the day.
And did you experience any physical difficulties yourself, Lori, or not?
You know, I was really fortunate this trip. I felt healthy the whole time. No side effects from the MS and no illness along the way, which is very hard. You're there for 2 months, and most people get, you know, GI tract illnesses or, you know, respiratory problems, and I did not. No injuries and no illness, so I was extremely, extremely fortunate.
Yes, you were, but you prepared for it as well.
I did. Mm-hmm. I did. It was interesting training here in Bayfield. I had ladders set up in the backyard across hay bales or up, you know, very tall trees. And then during the week, I would meet three or four women at our local hill, Mount Ashwaubea, and we would hike several times a week, go up each of the four slopes, and then go for coffee afterwards. So it was wonderful. They just were such a big part of helping to keep me motivated when I was training, and even as I was climbing around summit time, they all went out to Mount Ashwaubea, a big group of people, and climbed Mount Ashwaubea while I was summiting. So
I felt
a lot of love and support from this wonderful community while I was gone.
Yeah. Let's go to an email to you, and this is from Mike Sigmund. I, too, am a person with MS. One of the reasons that I'm an MS community ambassador and still volunteering with the MS Society of Wisconsin is how I found that it's far better to talk with others about what you can do rather than what MS causes you to dwell on what you can't. Can you talk about how important attitude is in dealing with MS?
You know, it is so important. I think, oddly, MS is so much like mountain climbing. You know, it has, in my mind, three parts to it, both the mountain climbing and the MS. Part of it is just good luck, you know. And I think a lot of it in my case is I was just very lucky to have MS that is quiet right now. I was also lucky on the mountain to have good weather and good health. The second part is your physical strength. On the mountain, I trained to really get my body as strong as I could be. At home, I try to do some kind of exercise every day, you know, just even walking down the driveway with my dogs to keep my body physically strong. But I think the most important of the three is the mental strength, because on the mountain, you get discouraged. You're there for 2 months. It's a long climb. You go up and down and up and down and up and down to acclimatize. It's just a long time. And with MS, it's the same thing. Your life can change from day to day. And I believe that we have to empower ourselves to hold a positive attitude and be open to the possibilities that are available in our life. They might not all be physical ones. And down the road, my goals may have to change drastically. You know, I can't always hope that I can be climbing mountains. I've got to think of other ways to keep myself positive. And I agree so much with that email. It really, you have to keep your mind saying that, yes, this is crummy, and you have to grieve it. I grieved it heavily for a year. But now I'm at a point in my life where it has empowered me in many ways, and I have to believe that my life is where it should be, and I have to feel good about that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Amy, too, for your call. Michael, for your email. Fred from Wisconsin Rapids. Hello.
Hi, guys. I'm glad I heard about your program today. My wife alerted me to it. I don't have MS, but I have posted in the past on the MS World Forum Board, and I encourage people with MS to do that. And many times I've been at the computer and I've kind of cried from the messages that I've read on that. But in any event, I have invested for several years in a company called Elan, E-L-A-N, and it's an Irish pharmaceutical company. And they have a drug that's been out several years now, and Biogen markets it, and it's called Tysabri, T-Y-S-A-B-R-I. It's been wonderful for the people with the more severe cases of MS, and it's stopped the relapses in their tracks. People in wheelchairs have actually regained their mobility. And one of the nice features of it is the drugs out there now, like Avonex and Copaxone, the person has to take a daily injection. With the drug Tysabri, you just go in once a month, and you have an IV. And so it eliminates those daily injections. So I encourage anybody with MS to talk to their neurologist and bring up the mention of this drug Tysabri. They're talking about it right now. Next year, it'll be the number one drug for MS out there, and yet I don't think a lot of people know about it. So this gave me the opportunity to call in, and I hope that your MS doesn't progress, but this is a drug out there that I think would really help. And there's also a lot of drugs that are in the pipeline right now that'll be coming out to the market, I'm sure, in the next year or two for those people with MS. So that's my little 2 cents worth.
All right. Thanks for the call. Lori?
Yeah, I have read a little bit about that medication, and they're making really leaps and bounds with, you know, different trial studies, even the oral medication trial study that the University of Madison Hospital is doing, and anything that could make that easier for people with MS and, you know, to help them get away from that daily injection. Wow, it's sure interesting to, you know, keep abreast of and follow up on. So thanks for that info.
Yeah. Do you have any idea, does the medical community have any idea why some people like you can be diagnosed with MS and you train for it, but you were still able to train for a number of years? You climb Mount Everest, for heaven's sake, and all these other mountains, and others may be more debilitated, and you don't know if you will be debilitated. It's a very... must be a difficult disease to deal with because of the variations here.
Well, I think that's the hard part. I mean, there's a lot of fear involved, you know, in the not knowing in people's minds. And it's just a very, you know, unexplained disease. And, you know, hopefully in the next few years with research, they can find the answers to those questions. I just feel very fortunate, like I said, that right now mine is in a quiet time. I was scared to death when my whole body was numb. It just was the most bizarre feeling. And I lived in a ski area in Steamboat Springs, and I remember going up to ski one day. I thought, I'm not going to let this get to me. And I usually skied the advanced runs, and I had difficulty skiing down the little cat paths that you would take to get down, you know, the walking paths. And I thought, this is it. This is the end of my physical life. And I still have balance issues. I tip over every time I try to tie my shoes. But, you know, it's just so hard to understand why some people have such a horrible time of it and others have an easy time,
right,
like I do right now. So.
Yeah. Well, how in the world do you deal with having balance issues when you're climbing up a mountain, Lori?
I asked myself that before I left on this line. You know, during the 9 months that I trained, I did several different balance exercises. When I went to the person, the acupuncturist here in our area, she set up a program for me, and a lot of it had to do with core body strength and balance. And so I do a lot of different balance exercises. I also have a little balance platform. It's a round disc. Underneath it, it has like a half ball size. And when you stand on the top of it, the flat round disc, it tips back and forth. And for a long time, I was even holding my dinner plate, trying to eat while I was jostling from side to side and bouncing. And when I'm on the computer, I sit on a big rubber ball, one of those exercise balls, so that I'm always challenging my torso and my balance, because it really is. That's a hard thing for me. But it's with me, it's mostly when I bend down, you know, in the squat position. So I try not to squat very often.
Mm-hmm. Right. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Lori Schneider is our guest, and she's a mountain climber. She's an inspirational speaker. She taught young students for a number of years. She has just returned from climbing Mount Everest, was diagnosed with MS in 1999, and still has been able to climb mountains with very, very, as you can hear, rigorous training and careful monitoring of her MS. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Lines are open if you'd like to speak with Lori now. 800-486-8655. The email address here is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lori Schneider is our guest, talking to us by phone from Bayfield, Wisconsin. She is grew up in Janesville and is living in Bayfield, Wisconsin now. Mountain climber, teacher, inspirational speaker for adults and youth, and just returned last week from climbing Mount Everest. Diagnosed with MS it was in 1999, some 10 years ago, and has been able to still train her body, still stay strong, and still climb Mount Everest, for heaven's sake. She has climbed the seven summits and has been an adventurer, a marathon runner, all over the world. Tom is our next caller from Green Lake. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Hi.
Very interested in your story. I have transverse myelitis, which is a rare autoimmune disease that's demyelinating of the spinal cord, similar to MS. And I'm partially able to get around the cane and crutches, but I wish there could be more attention paid to some of these lesser-known diseases, autoimmune diseases. MS seems like all the attention, but there are people like myself who have these rare diseases and wish we could get some money for research and so forth.
Boy, it would be so nice. You know, even the diagnosis of any of these autoimmune diseases would unlock keys for many others. And before I was diagnosed with MS, I was diagnosed called autoimmune disease with several things that had happened in my body for the 10 years previous. And now, you know, we feel like they were probably all related to the MS. But you're right, it would be wonderful if so many of these diseases would get more money for research, because I believe that the key to one will provide answers for so many.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your call. Lisa from Waukesha. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I was diagnosed on May 19th of this year, and I'm just at the very beginning. I still have the double vision and the numbness and everything. But I'm calling because, Lori, I wanted to thank you. When I was first diagnosed, and I still am very freaked out, but my mother clipped out articles from the Wisconsin State Journal about you, and I just have to tell you, it was just wonderful to see that, because it's great to know that I don't have to end up in a wheelchair and that I might be climbing mountains. I mean, I doubt that I'll be climbing mountains, but I'll be climbing mountains of my own.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? That's exactly it. And to tell you the truth, I didn't think I'd be climbing some of these mountains either, but I can, my heart goes out to you. When I was diagnosed, I know exactly what you're saying. That level of fear crept into my brain and my life, and it was hard to let go of that. It was so hard, and I had the vision part too. I called it jiggly eyes, when you would look and, you know, the whole room would kind of follow you. It was blurry vision, and all of those things are just overwhelming. And please give yourself some time to grieve it, because it's like a death. In at least to me, it seemed like a death to the life that I once knew, But what I didn't realize is that it made the life that I have ahead of me much richer. And I mean that in a very sincere, honest way. It made me realize that, number one, get off my behind and do what I would like to do in my life. Don't let that label stop you. And once you're over the fear, give yourself permission to have some goals and dreams that you want to pursue, and don't let people tell you you're crazy.
I think that's great advice. We were in the process of moving to Austin, Texas, and we were just about to sell our condo, and in one day everything changed. But the good news is, now that I'm here, I get to be with my sister and my mother, and I realize that staying with them can provide me just as much joy as going to a new city and having new adventures.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I still have adventures here.
Yeah. Now, another thing that is very real for me when I am really stressed, which the time that I got diagnosed was a very stressful time in my life, it made my symptoms much, much worse. And, you know, they have realized through some of the recent studies that MS can really be triggered by stress. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe living where you are with a good support system might help you through that too.
Definitely. We laugh a lot. And I also have Tourette syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned to cultivate my humor. I'm definitely using it now.
Uh-huh.
But
well, good luck to you, and God bless you, and please don't give up on those dreams.
No, I won't. That's not my personality.
Good.
Thank
good.
You so much,
thanks,
Lori.
Lisa.
I really appreciate it.
Thank
thanks
you.
Very much for
I appreciate
call.
Hearing from people like you.
Mm-hmm. I want to hear a little bit more about Everest here. You were there for 2 months. How long is that climb? And is that just in preparation for the elevation and special climbing techniques?
You know, it takes 2 months to do the climb because you start out, you hike into base camp, which takes, you know, a week or more. It's a long hike to get in. You get to base camp, you know, set up shop. You've got your own tent there because that is your base area where you then start to progress up the mountain in increments. So from base camp, you go through a very dangerous area called the Khumbu Ice Falls, lots of avalanches, and you're roped up, many ladders to cross over crevasses, and you go up to Camp 1. Spend a couple days up there at 19,500 feet, then you come back to base camp because your body sleeps better, you know, rests better, you eat better at a lower elevation. So then a few days later, you go back up through Camp 1 up to Camp 2 at 21,500 feet, spend a few nights there letting your body get used to the oxygen deprivation, and you go back down to base camp then for a few more days. You get, you know, a little bit healthier because your body really doesn't heal over 17,000 feet. If you have a cut, blister, doesn't heal well. Then from there, the killer is, for me, then we hiked all the way back down valley, back down to 12,000 feet. Once we're already at 21, and you go back up, you go to Camp 3 at 23,500 feet, and then you start to progress toward the summit. So you really climb Everest in many increments before you get anywhere near that summit of 29,035. So it really takes the full 2 months to let your body get used to the elevation so that you can do it. I mean, otherwise your brain, your lungs can fill up with fluid and it's very deadly.
Huh. You talked about stress being something you wanted to eliminate as much as possible from your life. Weren't all of those situations filled with high stress, Lori?
You know, they were not. Huh. Surprisingly, I had a calm about me on this climb that surprised me. When I left, I took photos and letters and notes that people had written me. I had a scarf, about a six-foot-long scarf that people had signed with messages and well wishes. I took all of those things with me, and I would look at them every morning and every night, and I thought, I'm going to be safe. I just knew it in my heart, and I felt very calm. Now, physically, there was a lot of physical stress, but it's really one foot in front of the other for a long, long time every day, 10-hour days, but or, you know, 18 hours on Summit Day. But it's really put one foot in front of the other.
Mm-hmm. Which is just not a bad motto for the whole thing here of life, right? Put one foot in front of the other. Lucy from Madison is our next caller. Lori, hi, Lucy.
Hello. Thank you so much for this wonderful program. And Ms. Schneider, there are so many things I want to say. I'm sort of an amateur scholar of Everest.
An Everest junkie. We call them Everest junkies.
Yeah, that would be me. And I don't think I could even make it to base camp, though that is my ambition. But I just wanted to say thank you. I lost a very dear friend to MS a couple of years ago, and I have, my own mother has MS. And you talked about how differently the disease can progress, but I just would like to hear you say something about what it was like to stand on the top of Mount Everest.
Oh, well, it's very interesting because Summit Day is a long, long day. You start actually the night before at 10 at night, hike all through the night in the dark with a headlamp on. Sunrise came, and it was the most glorious sunrise I'd ever seen. The skies were just every shade of pink you can imagine. Lightning happening in the background was illuminating all of the clouds. It was just magical. Then we hiked for many more hours, you know, trudged along. You'd take one breath, stop, and, move your foot forward, then take another few breaths, move again. By the time we got to the summit, the weather had moved in. There were storms coming. In the Bay of Bengal, there was a hurricane in India, and it was moving our way. So by the time we got to the summit, you couldn't see a darn thing. Not a view to be had. There was not one peak from the top. We looked around, and there were a few other people up there. We all trickled in at our own pace because we each had a Sherpa helping to carry our oxygen tanks on that day because we needed five of them. But looked around for a minute, and the head Sherpa said, "The weather's moving in. We have to get down quickly." And we were there less than 10 minutes, and then it was 6 hours to get back down. So it wasn't until the next day that I woke up, and I'm laying in my tent and, you know, kind of half asleep, and I thought, my gosh, I climbed Mount Everest yesterday. So the view from the top, I missed it, but it was still an amazing feeling. I called my dad and yelled, "I made it," and tried to call here at home and couldn't get through. But, it had been 16 years in the making, so it was wonderful.
Oh, I'm sure it was. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Do you have an email address in case, I know you give speeches too, Lori. Do you have a place people can reach you?
Yes.
Okay.
Through my website, the long version is empowermentthroughadventure.com or simply etadventure.com. There's all of my information on there, my email address and mailing address and phone number as well. And I always enjoy hearing from people, and especially stories of people with MS and the struggles that they've been going through. And, you know, a lot of people contact me, especially when they're in that newly diagnosed stage, when you're still in fear mode. And it helps me to talk to them because it helps me move myself into a different place in life. And it also reminds me that when I was so afraid and didn't feel like I had anyone to talk to, that you really aren't alone. So, mm-hmm. You know, I encourage people to go on the website. And, in fact, in about 2 weeks, I'll have photos and my journal entries from much of the Everest trip
Great.
That I load on there. So
Thank you, Lori, so much.
Yes.
Yeah, Lori Schneider. It's, again, empowermentthroughadventure.com. Empowermentthroughadventure.com. Quite a story, huh? Can you imagine being on the top of Mount Everest? It's just, ooh, she was talking and thinking, oh, my gosh. What a journey. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Rob Schroeder for on-air production, and to our friends in the Superior Bureau, Mike Simonson and John Munson, for alerting us to this story, because she is from Bayfield. It was fun. I do want to tell you that we are taking a little adventure of our own. We are going to Springfield, Wisconsin, and we're doing this on October 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. We're going to the Lincoln Museum, to the courthouse, to New Salem. We're going to have a marvelous Lincoln scholar, author of many books, give a keynote address on Friday. We have a Lincoln scholar who's traveling with us on the bus. It's going to be one marvelous trip. 414-227-2047 to register and talk to Katie. Thanks for listening on the Ideas Network.